This week we're living with Avraham Avinu. Yeah, it's good to live with Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, who toiled for a veritable lifetime before he heard from God. Only at age 75 does he finally get a commandment. And the commandment is totally counterintuitive. Here he is, after decades of banging his head against the wall, trying to get through to people. He's finally succeeding. People are finally listening to him. He's building what they would call, in today's terminology, a little ministry. And he has some success. And the Eibishter comes and says, Avraham, lech lecha, lech lecha. Where am I going? I can't tell you. But you just go. It's all going to work out. You'll see. You'll be letevascha, lahana'ascha. And the things that Hashem is promising Avraham are naturally decreased by travel. But Avraham Avinu doesn't even say a word. There's no conversation. Hashem says, lech lecha, and Avraham just goes. Vayelech Avraham. And he comes into the land, which eventually he discovers is the land of Canaan. And Avraham Avinu busies himself with preparing for the future. He comes to one place and he has a premonition of his grandchildren who will be in a difficult set of circumstances, will need divine intervention, builds a mizbeach, having in mind Shimon and Levi and the saving of Dinah. And then he comes elsewhere and he has a premonition of his grandchildren sinning in a terrible way and doing Avedis, and he makes an altar and he prays to Hashem. And then he lives in different parts of Eretz Yisrael. And by living in different parts of Israel, he's already setting the stage for the future. That's how he paves the way for the settlement of the land of Israel, ensuring that he acquires, if you will, every inch of the territory. And Avraham is only in Israel for a few months, but as soon as he comes, everything starts to change in the country. And the economy collapses, and there's a famine. And it's only in Israel. It's only where Avraham is. So who does everybody blame? When the economy goes bad, traditionally, who does everybody blame?
Blame the Jews.
Blame the Jews. Of course, blame the Jews. Who else could be responsible for this? So now Avraham Avinu, who listened to Hashem, came to this land, is being blamed for economic collapse, and that makes everybody angry, and he has no choice but to leave the land and go to a place of licentiousness and high immorality. This is the land we call today Egypt. And Avraham is heading down there, and he's really worried because his wife is exceptionally beautiful. Despite the fact that they've been traveling, her beauty is not diminished in any way, and her beauty is very different than the kind of feminine beauty the people in Egypt are used to. She's like the color of the Yazidis. She's like fair, and she's going to Egypt, and it looked very different to the ancient Egyptians. And she's going to stand out, and Avraham is afraid bad things are going to unfold as a result, and you can't rely on miracles. Even if you're here on God's dime, so to speak, and you're doing what Hashem wants, but you have to take the necessary measures. So in the end of the first reading, Avraham Avinu, getting closer to Mitzrayim, busies himself or concerns himself with the fact that Sarah is exceptionally attractive and that this may prove to be his undoing. And he says to his wife in the end of the first reading, the Egyptians will see you, so listen, make sure you say that you're my sister. Because the Egyptians will say you're my wife, and then they'll just kill me and they'll take you, make sure you live. So therefore, in verse 13, say that you are my sister, l'man yitavli, so that they will be good to me, ba'avurech, on your behalf. V'choyso nafshi, biglolech, and so as a result of you, I will live rather than die. Rashi says, yitavli means quite literally, yitnu li matanas, they'll give me gifts. What's going on here? How does Avraham figure that he's going to live because of Sarah and he's going to get gifts? So the Chizkuni translates this, or elucidates it in very, very clear fashion. He says, say that you're a married woman, because if you're not a married woman, then I'm going to be in trouble. But say your husband is away on a trip, and because they can't find your husband, they're not going to be able to kill him. See, in Egypt, if a woman comes and she's encumbered because she's married, they'll unencumber her very easily. How? Simple, make her a widow. You just unencumber her. You make her available. So therefore, the Chizkuni says, don't just say you're my sister. That's not going to help. He says, say your husband, the subtext is, say your husband's away on a business trip. Now, they can't kill him. They can't get rid of him. But they'll be so infatuated and enamored with you that they'll be good to me. The Sepharno is a little more explicit here. He says, just say you're my sister. And what will happen is that everybody will hope to win your hand in marriage. And how will they win your hand in marriage? In certain parts of the world, it's still like this. If you want to get a woman's hand in marriage, you have to get her father's agreement or her older brother's agreement. So Avraham would say, just say I'm your older brother. They're going to try to win your hand. I'll just stall. In the meantime, they'll be giving me all kinds of gifts, so we'll be able to pay our way, and we won't be penniless. We won't die of starvation. And in the middle, at some point, we'll just get out of here quickly. We're only here in the meantime because we are facing the real prospect of starvation. Once we're past that, you'll be safe, and we'll leave. And what happens? Oh, second reading opens up with exactly what happens. It's as Avram feared and far worse. Vayihi kivay Avram Mitzrayim. So Avram comes to Mitzrayim. Vayiru haMitzrayim esa isha. The Egyptians do immediately see the woman, and they see ki yofa hi me'od, that she is exceedingly beautiful. Vayiru esa sari pare, and then word spreads quickly. Now the Pharaoh's courtiers and ministers, they hear about this. Vayahalalua Isa al Pare. They spoke highly of her to the Pharaoh himself. Vatika Chaisha Beis Pare. The woman is taken to the house of the Pharaoh. Let's take a look at Rashi, because something extraordinary unfolds in verse 14. Up until verse 14, everything is in the plural tense. Avram is going and traveling. He's traveling with Sarai. He's traveling with his entourage, with his family. And yet, when it comes to going down into Mitzrayim, suddenly the tense changes. And instead of hearing about a plurality of people that are traveling, the Torah says, Vayihi kivoy Avram Mitzrayimah. Obvious question is, what happened to everybody else? Was Avram coming himself? The whole point was that he was coming with Sarah. That's the whole lead up of the last few verses. I'm coming with Sarah, and because I'm coming with Sarah, I'm going to have problems. And now all of a sudden he says, oh, kivoy Avram. Was there a change of plan? Did he leave Sarah elsewhere? Says Rashi, v'hoyoloi loimar, the verse should have been written, it should have said, kivoyom. Kivoyom means they are coming, plural. And Rashi answers, elo, limed, this verse comes to teach us. Shehitmin oisa b'teva, that he hid Sarah in a trunk, in his luggage. And the reason that he did this was because Avraham Avinu was not trying to make money off his wife. He was not hoping that everybody would try to win Sarah's hand in marriage and this way they could pay their bills. That was not what he hoped for. That was a worst case scenario, not a best case scenario. Because if that's what he was hoping for, then he would have made sure to display Sarah in a very prominent way and hope that they would come and notice her. Well, Avram did not hope for that. He clearly wanted to avoid this altogether. That was only a last-ditch resort. In case they find you, in case they become aware, and in case I'm right, and hopefully I'm wrong, but in case I'm right, then you'll say, Achay Siyat. So that how did they find her? Well, Avram comes with these sealed trunks, and of course, when they come to the border, what do they want to know? What are you carrying? It's tax time. And because they began to talk about taxes, and they said, we need to examine what kind of luggage you're bringing. What are you bringing into the country? And then we'll know what kind of taxes to charge you. So Paschal, they opened the trunk, and they saw her. And now things unfold very quickly, and it's not what Avram Avinu thought. Incidentally, the Chizkuni has a different take on this business of them coming. He says, there is no proof that Avram actually put her in a trunk. You don't have to follow that medrash on a simple level. You could simply tell us that Avram Avinu traveled, and since Avram Avinu was leading, so it's like Kivay Avram. When Avram was coming, everybody was coming with him. Of course, the problem with Chizkuni's approach is, then why isn't that the case in the other verses? And furthermore, verse 14 follows 11, 12, and 13, and in 11, 12, and 13, the emphasis is on Sarah. It's on the plural. It's on Sarah coming and what will happen. So for suddenly the Torah to revert to a tense and say, Avram Avinu is leading the pack, so therefore he's the only one mentioned, actually is totally counterintuitive. And that's why Rashi doesn't follow that. So he reaches for a medrash, although it doesn't explicitly state this elsewhere in the Torah. There is no other way to, in a pshutish al mikra, in a straightforward way, justify the fact that the Torah switches tenses after preparing us for this notion that Sarah and Avram are going to come and there's going to be a problem with Sarah, suddenly say, oh, we ignore it, Avram came. It doesn't make any sense. So therefore, Rashi follows that medrash, although it's not explicitly hinted to, and he says Avraham Avinu tried to hide Sarah, tried to shield Sarah, and it didn't work. What happened? Vayiru hametziyim esa isha ki yafa hima oid. They saw that she was exceedingly beautiful. Now, when Avraham Avinu noticed his wife was beautiful, or began to pay attention to it, he just said, Yadaiti ki isha yifas mara'at. I know you're attractive. But here it says, they saw she wasn't attractive. She wasn't ki yafahi, but yafahi ma'id. So what's up with the business of ma'id? So actually, this is how Sarah was protected. The Emek Dover says, precisely because she was yafah ma'id, so it wasn't one of the tax collectors that said, I'm going to take this woman. They said, oh, no, this is not for a tax collector. We would get in trouble if we took this woman. If the higher-ups will hear about this, then we'll get in trouble for not reporting such a find. So she's yafa ma'oid. Yafa kol kach, says the Emek Dover, that nimnu milakachas la'atzman. They said, nah, this is not for us. And we need to report this. And the Emek Dover says, here, the success of Avraham begins to unfold. Here he is, an unknown, unnamed, illegal alien or refugee who's coming because he has no food. He's already been displaced multiple times. He's from a distant land, and all of a sudden he's negotiating with the king of Egypt, the most powerful man in the region, possibly in the whole world at the time. And this is the meteoric rise of Avraham, where Avraham suddenly is catapulted onto the international stage, and suddenly he's going to be in direct contact with the ruler of the country. And that's how the next verse unfolds. Vayiru eisa sare pare. So the ministers of the Pharaoh hear about it. And they said, nah, this is not just for nobility. This is for a Pharaoh himself. Ramban says that even the ministers were afraid to touch her. They said, wow, this is a yoifi godol kolkach. This is such an extraordinarily beautiful woman. Hamelech yachbetz bel. We'll get into trouble. So everybody was afraid of their superior. And that's how it made its way all the way to the Pharaoh. Now it says, the Torah very clearly spells out what happened. Vatika Isha base Pare, she went to the house of Pare. Rabbeinu Yosef Bechar says, it doesn't say she was taken to Pharaoh's bed, she was taken to Pharaoh's home. And there, Sarah was under royal detention. And as the Midrashim tell us, the Pharaoh couldn't just marry a woman. That wouldn't look good. That would be political suicide. The Pharaoh first had to create a narrative. So he called her the Duchess of Goshen. And she was living in this palatial area. And he created an imagery and he put out messages. This very, very wonderful woman, a woman of high birth and nobility, has arrived in our country and she's being promoted. And then the plan was that the Pharaoh would make a grand royal wedding and then everybody would kind of accept that. And this was, of course, the secret of Avraham Avinu's success. This is why he had time to be able to get himself out of this problem. That's how things open up in the beginning of the second reading. End of the second reading, into the beginning of the second, third. Into the beginning of the second reading. So, now we're going to take a look in the Biurim book. And we're going to see an incredible medrash, a borderline astonishing medrash, what we like to call in the lexicon of unusual medrashim, a medrash pliya, from the word pella. A wondrous medrash about this, which on the surface seems to have no explanation whatsoever. On this very verse, Imrina Achaisiat, and Laman Yitavli, page Kufnuntes, by the way. Kufnuntes Simenches. The Medrash says, quote, Imrina Achaisiat, say you're my sister, Mikan Shesheichetin L'chayla B'Shabbos. From here we learn that one is permitted to slaughter an animal so that you can feed somebody who is ill on Shabbos.
Okay. Really?
Really, eh? Oh, achosiat. Oh, so we can slaughter a cow. How did you get there? Va'ochin zehu pella. This is actually astonishing. Mahu akesher ben shnei hanyanim melu. What in heaven is the connection between these two things? So on a very simple level, some say, did Avraham Avinu rely on a miracle? Did he say, God will help? No. What did he do? He took the precautions he had to take. He did what was necessary to ensure that in case they find Sarah, first of all, he hit her. Hoped that she wouldn't get fined. In case they would find her, she would have an alibi. Achosiat. And therefore, when a person has somebody sick on Shabbos, he doesn't say, oh, Hashem will make a miracle. I'm sure it's going to be good. Hashem wants us to keep Shabbos, so if somebody's sick, Hashem will make things work, and everything will be just fine. So, but Avraham Avinu didn't rely on miracles, and neither should we. And if somebody's sick and they need medical assistance on Shabbos, or they need some kind of aid or help, then you do it, even if it includes violating Shabbos. The Rebbe says, if that was the explanation here, then it should have said, Mikan she'ein seimchen al hanes. From here we see that you don't rely on miracles. Besides the fact that according to the Zohar, Avraham Avinu actually did rely on a miracle. The Zohar says that Avraham Avinu was certain a miracle would happen with her, for her, and when he said, Achoy si'at, he saw Malachim with Sarah, he knew she'd be protected. He said, regardless of what happens, I know she'll be okay, it's going to work out, and maybe this is how Hashem is going to give us parnasa. Okay, that Zohar is a separate thing, but the bottom line is, to explain the Medrash simply by saying, don't rely on miracles, is a little lackluster. So, kedei levayer zeis, yesh lahakdim es hakusha hayadua. Let's first preface with another well-known question about this narrative. Madua savar Avraham of Shamitzim yahargu Esau, kedei sheyuchal lekachas asara. Why was Avraham so sure he'd be killed? Why did he think this was going to be his problem? Minayin lei, how was he so sure sheisra shvichas damim nechosha ve'eni amitzim chamer pachos meisra eshasish? Like basically, what do we say from the Chizkuni? We said, say your husband's elsewhere, so they won't kill him to make you available. I mean, that sounds kind of crazy. You're saying that they would kill a man not to commit adultery? Mimanafshach, if you're worried about doing the right thing, if you're concerned with violating God's mores, then how could you commit an act of murder? And anyway, what's worse, murder or adultery? Unfortunately, in our society, there are many people who commit adultery, and not as many people who commit murder. So, in people's minds, murder is not nearly on the same scale, equal playing field. Yesterday, I attended a class. We talked about doing Averis and a person having Yetzer Hara. And this guy starts talking about his friend who slept with his friend's wife. I'm not so sure he's not talking about himself, but whatever. He's talking about, he had no choice. My friend had no choice. And it's like, hello, did you pick up a gun and kill somebody because you had no choice? Like, what does that mean, right? But somehow, adultery, okay, you know, like, but murder? Like, how do we get to that jump exactly? Avraham say, I know, if you say that you're my wife, they're going to kill me. They're going to commit murder. They won't commit adultery, but they'll definitely commit murder. That actually makes no sense. And it's counterintuitive, and it's not what we're used to, even though we live in a very libertarian and immoral society today. So v'yeshleimar, so the Rebbe says, the answer is Avraham, Savar Avraham, reasoned, Shamitzim yadifu lahargai, the Egyptians would still choose murder over adultery. Why? Shebekach ya'avru al iser pam achas bovad. Then they violate one aveda. One sin, iser etzach. You know, they arrange a well-placed accident. Avraham Avinu would be coming home from the store. He just bought some breakfast. Would you believe it? The scaffolding collapsed. And it's such a sorry state. Miss, your husband died on the way home today. We're very sorry to tell you. There was a camel went loose, went nuts, and your husband's dead. You know, very conveniently arranged murder, and that's all. But that would be better for them, because that way it's a one-time misdemeanor. Did a one-time aveda. If they just take Sarah, then they're living in sin perpetually. Every time they're with Sarah, it's an Aveira. So Avraham Avinu said, these people would rather do one quick sin than rather many, many smaller sins. And this, my dear friends, is the meaning. There's a simple question. A person, you say, is ill. He needs to have chicken soup. So what are you going to do? Okay, you go shecht a kosher chicken and make chicken soup on Shabbos. What other option is there? Go get non-kosher chicken soup. Simple. Why do you have to shecht? Eat non-kosher food. Madu anu matirim lishchit achila b'Shabbos. Why do we permit that there should be shchita taking place for achila? Hadi lecheira odif losis libsar nevela. So give him non-kosher food. Ela asiba lakachu kamor. The answer is, as we said earlier, b'shchita, when you shecht the animal, when you slaughter the animal, you kill the bird, Oiver ha-sheichet al iser achas bovad. The sheichet is violating how many sins? Just one. It's a one-time shechita. Ve'ilu ba'achilas nevela. But when you're going to eat non-kosher food, yeshne iser ba'achilas kol kezayis u kezayis. Every serving you eat, you're violating the Torah. We can see from the words of Avram that there is a logic, a rhyme, and a reason. Lahadif al iser pam achas, v'le'lavar al iser pamim rabbis, that we should violate a sin once rather than violate a sin many times, which actually is the reasoning that's brought in Shulchan Aruch, in the words of the Ran. This is the Ran's svara, and that svara is based essentially on this medrash. We're out of time today, there's more about this, but that basically gives us an understanding of how Avraham Avinu's rhyme and reason and logic of why they would kill him actually forms the logic or the jurisprudence of how come on Shabbos we're permitted to violate what seems to be a bigger sin instead of violating a smaller sin, because it's a question of one sin versus many sins. And so you can see that every little word in Torah has many layers of meaning. Thank you.